Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, Text 7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yaradatha mato brahmam deharambo sadatubi yadrachaya hetuna va bhavanto janate yata. O learned Brahman, the transcendental spirit soul is different from the material body. Does he acquire the body accidentally or by some cause? Will you kindly explain this, for it is known to you. Purport. Maharaj Parikshit, being a typical devotee, is not only satisfied by confirming the importance of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from the representative of Brahmaji by disciplic succession, but he is still more anxious to establish the philosophical basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the science of the personality of Godhead, and as such, all questions that may arise in the mind of a serious student must be cleared by the statements of the authority. A person on the path to devotional service may inquire from his spiritual master all about the spiritual position of God and the living beings. From the Bhagavad Gita as well as from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is known that qualitatively, the Lord and the living being are one. The living being in the conditioned state of material existence is subjected to so many transmigrations by continuous changing in the material body. But what are the causes of the material embodiment of the part and parcel of the Lord? Maharaj Parikshit inquires about this very important matter for the benefit of all classes of candidates on the path of self-realization and devotional service to the Lord. Indirectly, it is confirmed that the Supreme Being, the Lord, makes no such material changes of body. He is spiritually whole, but with no difference between his body and his soul, unlike the conditioned soul. The liberated living beings who associate with the Lord in person are also exactly like the Lord. Only the conditioned souls awaiting liberation are subjected to change of bodies. How was the process first begun? In the process of devotional service, the first step is to take shelter of the spiritual master and then inquire from the spiritual master all about the process. This inquiry is essential for immunity to all kinds of offenses on the path of devotional service. Even if one is fixed in devotional service, like Maharaj Parikshit, he must still inquire from the realized spiritual master all about this. In other words, the spiritual master must also be well-versed and learned, so that he may be able to answer all these inquiries from the devotees. Thus, one who is not well versed in the authorized scriptures and not able to answer all such relevant inquiries should not pose as a spiritual master for the matter of material gain. It is illegal to become a spiritual master if one is unable to deliver the disciple. Om Gyanatimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurinmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manogrishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadhamayam Dadati Sapadantigham Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Prabhupada says that Maharaj Parikshit, being a typical devotee, is not only satisfied by confirming the importance of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, but he's anxious to establish the philosophical basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the previous verses were about the importance of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that will bring us back to our typical little overview, where we've just finished a section where Lord Brahma had explained the creation to Narada Muni, the process of creation, and explained about the Lord and his different energies, and that one can only understand them by the process of devotional service, and then concluded by telling Narada Muni to continue the disciplic succession by taking this knowledge and explaining it very, very carefully and systematically so the conditioned souls can be liberated. This particular discussion was being told by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prickett in reference to his own questions about the creation. So after explaining to Maharaj Prickett the process of creation by referring to the discussion between Narada Muni and Lord Brahma, where Lord Brahma ended that discussion by telling him to continue the disciplic succession, then Maharaj Prickett asked Sukadeva Goswami, please tell us how Narada Muni preached this. How Narada Muni preached this. Sukadeva then King Prickett then inquired from Sukadeva, how did Narada Muni explain the Supreme Lord, and for whom did he speak? So how did he do this after his guru had instructed him to speak about the Supreme Lord, and whom did he speak? And then Maharaj Prickett continued, because what Lord Brahma asked Narada Muni to explain was the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he continued to explain the importance of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, and not only the importance of understanding it, but he also expressed his own desire to understand this narration, which concerned the Lord and his various potencies. I'm trying to, if you remember, specifically when Narada Muni asked about Sukadeva Goswami about the process of creation. What is the process of creation? It's explaining about the Lord and his Shakti or potency. So when Lord Brahma asked Narada Muni to explain the same knowledge to the conditioned souls for their benefit, he asked them to explain about the Lord and his potencies. So Maharaj Prickett said, I also wish to know the narration concerning the Supreme Lord, which is about his abhuta viryasya, about his virya, his great wonderful powers, the abhuta, his wonderful strength and powers. And then he began to explain why he wanted to hear about the Lord and his wonderful potencies of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there were many, many verses that we had covered about that. How? Because they're sumangala. They're very, very most auspicious for all people. And by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and therefore fixing the mind on Krishna, one becomes detached from everything in this world. He becomes detached from everything in this world, and he is able to relinquish this material body. Not only give up the attachments to the material body, but relinquish the material body itself. And when you hear the Srimad Bhagavatam in the right way, nityam, regularly, shadaya, with faith, seriously, swacheshtatam, by one's own endeavors, then vishate hrida, the Bhagavan vishate hrida, then the Supreme Lord enters into the heart. And when you hear this wonderful sound vibration and it awakens your bhava or your constitutional relationship with Krishna, it awakens your devotion, then dunoti, then the heart becomes completely cleansed. And then when the heart becomes completely cleansed by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, then the devotee never relinquishes the lotus feet of Krishna in any difficulty, in any circumstance. He becomes so fixed in Krishna consciousness. He has that intimate relationship with Krishna, and he sees the goal of Krishna consciousness, and therefore to achieve that goal, he can undergo any amount of difficulty. And specifically, when the Srimad Bhagavatam awakens that sense of devotion, it inspires him to preach Krishna consciousness. I met this devotee today, Yadu. And he came here about 10 years ago. And he was in my Bhagavad Gita class, my Bhakti Shastri class, 10 years ago. So I noticed that this devotee was not only learning all the philosophy, but he was memorizing every verse. I told you, at that time, the way he wound up here, he was in the BBT in Spain. And when Jai Pataka got attacked, Yadu also knew karate, and he chased the person who had attacked Jai Pataka and wrestled him to the ground and captured him. But he didn't have a visa for the country, so they put him in jail and threw him out. And he wound up in Vrindavan. But when I saw him today, hi, Bo, come in. When I saw him today and I spoke to him again, I always ask when he's going to go out and preach, you know, and he says, well, I want to do this, and, you know. So I'm seeing that this idea of, you know, our idea generally is like, okay, preach and be purified, which is definitely we need to do, but to really preach, I see that people who put time into their studies and their practices with that mood, that they're really going to be able to preach. And I was just thinking, what if he just went out at that time, but now he has plans to preach? But I keep on asking him, there's always one more thing he's going to learn. So now he's studying Hindi. And he's even hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam in Hindi. Every day, there's one scholar. He's supposed to be very brilliant. What he does is he puts the Sanskrit in the Hindi. So you really get the meaning. So what he actually wants to do, I mean, he has so many ideas that he'll be able to speak Bhagavatam in Hindi in South America to the Indians. How much that you can see the ideas he has. And then, and next October, he'll take a yatra for 1 year. And there's so many people invited him in different places in India, so he'll visit their homes to really learn the culture. But when he goes out to preach, you can see he's going to, I mean, if he goes back to South America to preach with his character, with his knowledge, with his culture, he'll start a revolution. And if he just would have went out before, he'll be able to do more in 1 year than he would in those 10 years. So this sense here that Prabhupada brings also, that by this hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, that if you awaken that sense of devotion, then spontaneously you will preach. Now here, to establish the philosophical basis of Krishna consciousness, Maharaj Prickett is going to ask innumerable questions. So you can imagine ourselves, why we came to Krishna consciousness, most of us. The reason we came to Krishna consciousness is because we found a body of wisdom that could explain all different phenomena. And we asked this question and that question and that question, and the devotees had the answer. Everybody knows we may not have the best social system. You know, we may not have the best management. But we have the best philosophy and we have the best food. And it's on that basis that people come. When I sometimes visit Raghunath, who lives in Brooklyn Heights, it's a very exclusive disciple, Raghunath, very exclusive neighborhood in New York, one of the really top neighborhoods. Believe it or not, it's only a 10-minute walk from the Brooklyn Temple, but it's the best neighborhood. One of the best. Many famous people live there. Arthur Miller lived there. Norman Mailer. Very prominent writers. But what that area is called New Bethlehem. It's the Mayapur for the Jehovah Witnesses. And it's very, very interesting to watch their culture. And they come up to preach to Raghunath. You know, because he's such a social person. But it's interesting to watch their culture, that the people that live there, they own 30% of Brooklyn Heights. It's the most exclusive real estate. And all their people are like spotlessly clean. And they have everything. They have a farm upstate with all their food. Their preachers get $50 a month. But they get all their facilities. But they get $50 a month. But you can see they have everything. Their own laundry, cleaning, everything. And what happens is they also near there have their printing presses. So at 12 o'clock, the whole streets fill up with all their people. They meet together to take lunch and have worship. No philosophy, but a great social system. So here he wants to establish the philosophical basis, because as Prabhupada said, demons are like, doubts are like demons. Jiva Goswami said that Shraddha is very, very difficult. Faith is very, very difficult. But Ashraddha, or lack of faith, is very, very easy, because for one little thing wrong, there's a Shraddha. And everything has to be right for Shraddha or faith. So therefore, to remain fixed in the absolute truth, before one has sufficient realization of that absolute truth, his doubts must be cleared. Just like I remember when the fifth canto came out, I remember devotees leaving the movement because of things that Prabhupada said about the moon and the sun, and, you know, people left. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted, you know, the devotees to explain, be able to, you know the tattva, know the subjects. So what is the first question that is asked? It says the soul, adhatu, which is spiritual, is that it's spiritual and it's different from the deha or the body. So how Arambha, in the beginning, asya, of the living being, Dhatubi, how did he get matter? How did he become attached to the body? Yadrichaya, is it without cause or hetuna? Is it by accident, or is there some cause? Will you kindly explain this? For it is known to you. So the living being in the conditioned state of material existence is subjected to many transmigrations by continuous changing in the material body. But what are the causes of the material embodiment of the part and parcels of the Lord? I'm not sure if this is kind of like an origin of the jiva question. But will you kindly explain this, for it's known to you? At this point, Prabhupada says that the teacher, he has to have this knowledge. And why? Because you have to become immune to offenses on the path of the way. If you don't have knowledge, you're not going to be able to execute the process of Krishna consciousness properly. You're going to make mistakes. And therefore, the teacher must be well-versed and learned, so he must be able to answer all these inquiries. One who is not well versed in the authorized scriptures and not able to answer all such relevant inquiries must not pose as spiritual master for the matter of material gain, because it's a good business. So one has to be very careful. Now we'll go on. If the Supreme Person, so we'll just appreciate these as very intellectual and mental people who like to ask a lot of questions. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose from abdomen the lotus stem sprouted, is possessed of a gigantic body according to his own caliber and measurement, then what is the specific difference between the body of the Lord and those of the common living beings? So this is the universal form. The Lord assumes the universe as his body. So then what's the difference between him and the the pratak, the difference between him and the living entity. What's the difference? There's no difference in the principle of assuming or accepting a particular type of body in terms of necessity, Prabhupada says. Because they, you know, they both accepting bodies according to necessity. The Lord to animate the universe, you know, through Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, he accepts the universe as his body. A living being and the Lord cannot be distinguished simply by the difference in the magnitude of the body. It says, because it says here, he accepted the gigantic body according to his own caliber and measurement. So there's no difference simply by the magnitude of the body. Then what is the specific difference? The answer, Prabhupada says, depends on the specific significance of the body of the Lord as distinguished from the body of the common living entity. And again, Prabhupada points out, one should note how Maharaj Prickett intelligently put questions before his spiritual master for a scientific understanding of the transcendental body of the Lord. Brahma, who is not born of a material source, but of the lotus flower, coming out of the navel abdomen of the Lord, is the creator of all those who are materially born. Of course, by the grace of the Lord, Brahma was able to see the form of the Lord. So now he's asking, what is the difference between Lord Brahma and the Lord? Because Lord Brahma, it says, Ajaha, he's one who's born without a material source. He's coming out of the lotus. So if he's Ajaha, then what is the difference between Lord Brahma and Krishna? And specifically it says here, Anugrahat Dadrishe Tat Rupam. Dadrishe, he could see Anugrahat by the mercy, Tat Rupam, the form of the Lord. So this question is going to be answered in the ninth chapter. What is the form of the Lord that Lord Brahma saw? And that's when we'll hear the story of the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam. Because when Lord Brahma performed austerities and then saw the form of the Lord, he asked questions about creation. So this question will be asked. And whether that form seen by Brahma is the same as quality of that of Brahma. It's a question that should be answered. People ask. Please explain the personality of Godhead who lies in every heart as the super soul and as the Lord of all energies, but is untouched by his external energy. So explain how the Supreme Lord, who's in the heart of every living entity, who also is Maya Isha, he's the Lord of all energy of energies, and he's Vishva Stati Udbhava Apaya. He annihilates, he maintains, and he creates the material world. Explain how he is Muktva. He's not touched by all these activities, even though he enters into the world in so many ways, as the Purusha avatars, as the super soul, as the guna avatars creating the world. Explain how he's untouched by the external energy. O learned Brahmanas, it was formally explained that all planets of the universe with their respective governors are situated in the different parts of the gigantic body of the Virat Purush. I have also heard that the different planetary systems are supposed to be in the gigantic body of the Virat Purush. But what is their actual position? Will you please explain that to me? So, formally, he was told about the universal form. This is in the sixth chapter. Purusha Shukta confirmed how all the planets are on the body of the Lord with their respective sapalas, the controllers, different parts. I've heard about this. What is their actual position? I've heard, Sushuma, what is their actual position? Please discuss this. Also explain the duration of time between creation and annihilation and that of other subsidiary creations, as well as the nature of time indicated by the sound of past, present, and future. Also, please explain, this is text 12, the duration and measurement of life of the different living beings known as demigods, the human beings, and different planets. So this is it. Explain kalpa. So kalpa is the duration of time between creation and annihilation. Then explain vikalpa. That's subsidiary creation annihilation. That's another thing of time. Maybe at the day of Brahma or something, when there's a partial annihilation. Then also explain kala, or time, which is measured by bhuta, bhavya, and bhavat, by past, present, and future. So he wanted all these questions. O purest of the brahmana, please also explain the cause of the different durations of time, both short and long, as well as the beginning of time following the course of action. So brihat, anvi, great and small, time, because time is relative. So sometimes, like Lord Brahma, his one moment is like a day of the earth planet, as was exhibited in Brahma Vimoham Vila. So he wanted to know, explain all this. And explain the beginning of time following the course of action. So I guess this is the relationship between kala and karma. I'm not sure there. Then again, kindly describe how the proportionate accumulation of the reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature act upon the desiring living being, promoting or degrading him among the different species of life, beginning from the demigods down to the most insignificant creatures. So this is also explain how your karma leads your okay. How your karma or the reactions to your activities I'll read in the purport how Prabhupada says Marge Prickett inquires on the basis of proportionate actions of goodness which qualify one in this planet to be promoted to the higher region. So explain how your activities lead to situation in different modes of nature. How these reactions take place and to what degree they lead to different situations in the universe. This is explained. And Prabhupada just gives simple examples how America doesn't allow people to come from less prosperous countries. In other words, they're not qualified to come to America because they're less prosperous. So if you're less prosperous in karma, you're not qualified for certain places. And Prabhupada also describes a judge as a certain qualification. So explain in the universe, what are the qualifications for the different residences according to the modes of nature? Prabhupada quotes 9:25. What is that verse, 9:25? And what does it mean? Yeah, that's what this verse is about. According to your level, this destination. O best of the brahmanas, please also describe how the creation of the globes throughout the universe, the four directions of the heaven, the skies, the planets, the stars, the mountains, the rivers, the seas, and the islands, as well as their different kinds of inhabitants take place. So the inhabitants of different places are different. Different people live in the desert, different people live in the jungle, different people live in the city, different people live in the country. So just describe how this manifests. Also describe the inner and outer space of the universe by specific directions, as well as the character and activities of the great souls, and also the characteristics of the different classifications of caste and order. So describe Vanashram, describe about the universe. So it looks like we got like, you know, Sataputta and Jaishila, Vanashram, you know, different things. And hope maybe I'm the Mahatam and the activity, no. And as well as the character and activities of the great souls. So those who are the opinion that devotees are satisfied with mere sentiments can find in the inquisitive inquiries of Maharaj Prickett good lessons as to how inquisitive a pure devotee is to know things in their true perfection. Maharaj Prickett, though, is not satisfied with only material knowledge. He is inquisitive about the character and activities of the great souls, the devotees of the Lord. The glories of the Lord and the glories of his devotees combined together comprise the complete knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Prabhupada gives the example of Lord Krishna, who showed his mother the complete universal form. So it's the Lord and the devotees. Please explain all the different ages in the duration of the creation, and also the duration of such ages, and also tell me about the different activities of the different incarnations of the Lord. So he also wants authoritatively to know about the incarnations, which he asked about before, because he didn't want incarnations of God to be accepted cheaply. So he wants to know how the Lord appears. Please also explain what may generally be the common religious affiliation of human society, that's Sadaran Dharma, as well as the specific occupational duties in religion, the classifications of the social orders as well as the administrative royal orders, and the religious principles for one who may be in distress. So this is also, he wanted to know Sadaran Dharma. Common, it means bhakti, because the eternal principle of religion is that we're part and parcel of Krishna and meant for his service. So that's the common religion. It means the religion of all classes is Sanatan Dharma, whatever religion. If people believe in God, it's Sanatan Dharma. So that's the common religion. And then specific, Subhishesha, the specific religious affiliation, that means in terms of different countries and cultural circumstances. He wanted to learn comparative religion also. And very interesting. So many things he's learning here. What are the opulences of the great mystics, and what is their ultimate realization? How does the perfect mystic become detached from the subtle astral body? What is the basic knowledge of the Vedic literatures, including the branches of history and the supplementary Puranas? So, Yogeshvarya Gatir, he wanted to know the opulences, the cities of the yogis, like Prabhupada describes in Nectar of Devotion. He wanted to know them. And when you know about those cities, you also should know, as Prabhupada is explaining, the devotees of the Lord, they do not directly practice the process of mystic powers, but by their grace, they have more power. And the example is Ambarish and Durvasa Muni. Because Durvasa was such a powerful mystic. But Ambarish was just he was a king who was a humble soul and surrendered to God, so he had the power of God. Therefore, the devotee has greater powers than the mystic yogi, which is simply based on his karma or his own particular effort. And the other example was Draupadi. By Krishna's power, unlimited sari was manifest to protect her from the Kauravas. So the devotees are also Yogeshvaras. And he also inquired about the Gati, the destination of such yogis. And he also inquired how they become detached from the linga, detached from the astral or subtle body, and how that's dealt with. And also about Upaveda, knowledge and pursuance of the Vedas. So all these things he asked. Please explain to me how the living beings are generated, how they maintained and how they are annihilated. Tell me also of the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service unto the Lord. What are the Vedic rituals and the injunctions of the supplementary Vedic rites? And what are the procedures of religion, economic development, and sense gratification? So what he asked about here, he asked about samplava, the perfect means or complete devastation. And then he asked pratishankrama, or the ultimate destruction. So Prabhupada translates in another way. Because it says how the living entities are generated, how they're maintained, and how they're annihilated. But also it means, tell me about the, kasamplava also means perfect means. So it also means to explain to me the perfect means of discharging devotional service. And this pratisamplava means the opposite, or that which destroys the progress of devotional service. And Prabhupada said, one who is firmly situated in devotional service can very easily execute the function of conditional life. So he explains this here. And therefore, the spiritual master is responsible for explaining the advantage and disadvantage of discharging devotional service. Just as Maharaj Prickett asked here, Prabhupada said, the advantages and disadvantages. What to do, what not to do. I explained before in the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam, the four main verses, the one that explains Abhideya Tattva, or the truth about practicing devotional service. It says you should search for this, which means love of Godhead, everywhere and anywhere, directly and indirectly. And Prabhupada explains that directly and indirectly means that the spiritual master will explain directly, chanting and hearing, indirectly, vanashram, how to situate yourself. Directly, the practices of Krishna consciousness, or the rules. Indirectly, the regulations, or what not to do. Directly, what is devotional service? And indirectly, what are the obstacles to devotional service? What to avoid? Like one may explain about aparad and Vaishnava aparad. So these things are explained. Tomorrow we'll finish this chapter. It's all these different questions. Of course, at the end, there's always this special nectar where there's always this incredible relationship between Maharaj Prickett, because he's asking all these questions. And then when Sukadeva Goswami was invited to speak, he was very pleased, and he began to reply by saying that the science of the personality of Godhead is so wonderful, and he prepared himself to speak. And it's very nice. What was that verse? It said that Maharaj Prickett tells him, this is a famous verse, O learned Brahmins, because of my drinking the nectar of the message of the infallible personality of Godhead, which is flowing down from the ocean of your speeches, I do not feel any sort of exhaustion due to my fasting. Which is very nice from Maharaj Prickett, because of his thirst, he became angry that the sage Shamaka Rishi would not give him water. Because of his thirst, he became angry. He was disturbed by his thirst. And now when he was hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, he not only was thirsty, but he wasn't eating or drinking for 7 days. And he's completely undisturbed. Okay, are there any questions? Brother Narayani, any comments you have? Okay. Okay, then we can end today.
Oh, yeah. I found something here. When you become spiritually advanced, you naturally want to preach.
Yeah.
And the Prabhupada mentioned in the lecture about the yogi, he was speaking on the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
How the yogi, he sees Paramatma, he realizes Paramatma. And then Prabhupada said, he can't just sit idle, he has to go out and preach and tell everyone about it.
Wow.
He had the yogi out. Sit peacefully, meditate.
It's such a nice combination of being very satisfied in simple devotional service and It's just natural that when some devotion for Krishna develops, you want to glorify Krishna. And glorifying Krishna means glorifying the process of realizing Him. I think it's so natural. Think like that in a sense. Anyway, it's so purifying preaching, but it's also purifying chanting and hearing and doing it by this spiritual impetus. Okay. Text 20, what is this? 21. Please explain to me how the living beings are generated, how they are maintained, and how they are annihilated. Tell me also of the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service unto the Lord. What are the Vedic rituals and injunctions of the supplementary Vedic rites, and what are the procedures of religion, economic development, and sense gratification? So, here in this verse, more questions are being asked, and Prabhupada here in the purport, because he's asking about, you know, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, which is samplava, prati sankrama. And vikrama, how all beings are sustained, created, this type of thing. But also these words mean something else, because samplava means perfect means, and prati sankrama or prati samplava means the opposite, or that which is against. So really what Maharaj Prickett is asking is not just about the creation, but what is favorable for devotional service and what is against devotional service. And Prabhupada describes how it's not easy to cross over the ocean of material existence. Therefore, everyone should take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and be a pure devotee of the Lord by all means. In other words, the process of knowing what is favorable and unfavorable is to take shelter of a devotee. And Prabhupada therefore says, one should therefore know therefore from the expert spiritual master the advantages and disadvantages of discharging devotional service, just as Maharaj Prickett asked the spiritual master. So Prabhupada begins to list some of the things that are not favorable: to eat more than is required, to accumulate more money. This is like Upadeshamrita. To not earn things in a dishonest way, to give up, not talk prajalpa. You know, so this way. And then the last paragraph on page 115, favorable things. And Prabhupada says specifically, one should be enthusiastic about speaking about Krishna consciousness and spreading it. So that's basically what's discussed in the purport. A devotee should see the right discharge of devotional service under guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, and one should not only stick to formalities. So this is niyamagraha also. I didn't realize that, but basically this verse paraphrases Upadeshamrita, because you have a lot of the different elements of it. Pratyahara, atyahara. So what's favorable and unfavorable? And then these other things were asked. Please also explain how, merged in the body of the Lord, living beings are created, and how the infidels appear in the world. Also, please explain how the unconditioned living entities exist. So this is very, very much like the last two subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Last two subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam are Narodho Muktir. Very much like how the living beings are merged in the body of the Lord and then they're created again. This is Narodho. And and then also explain how the unconditioned living entities exist. That's like mukti. What is the liberated condition? And then what is the material condition? And that's bandha. And moksha, how are they liberated? It says, how are they liberated? Moksha. And then they're situated in their swarup. So the verse that's given in the Srimad Bhagavatam to describe the liberated condition of the living entity is muktir hitva yata rupam swarupam vivastita. Same thing. Vivastita swarupa. So this is describing nirodha, or winding up of the material manifestation, and mukti. The eighth and ninth subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's actually asking. I never realized that before, but the word, the last verse is the Upadeshamrita, the six qualities, and this is the last two subject matters. Marge Prickett asked all these questions from the bona fide spiritual master in order to become fully equipped in the science of God. The independent Yatatma Tantra Bhagavan Vikradatyatma Maya Visvijaya Yatamayam Udaste Sakshivad Vibhu. The independent personality of Godhead enjoys his pastimes by his internal potency, and at the time of annihilation gives them up to the external potency, and he remains a witness to it all. So the independent tantra, atma tantra, sometimes independent is also called swatantra. Atma tantra. You know what tantra means? Because it's swatantra, atma tantra. He's independent, and this is what he does. He appears. The time of annihilation gives them up to his external potency. I'm wondering if that refers to the Vishwarup, which he leaves in this world. And then he remains a witness. In every respect, he's independent. And Prabhupada said, Maharaj Prickett desired to know more perfectly, for a pure devotee ought to know well. So we should have all our doubts cleared. Sarvam me tachcha bhagavan prichito me napurvasa tatvato hasyudarartum prapanaya mahamune. O great sage, representative of the Lord, kindly satisfy my inquisitiveness in all that I have inquired from you and all that I may not have inquired from you from the very beginning of my questionings. Since I am a soul surrendered unto you, please impart full knowledge in this connection. O great sage, representative of the Lord, kindly satisfy my inquisitive in all that I have inquired from it, and all that I may not have inquired. This is his faith in Guru, that he knows everything he asked and everything he hasn't asked. From the very beginning of my questioning, answer me, whatever I've asked, whatever I haven't asked. Since I am a surrendered soul unto you, please impart full knowledge. And that's actually the most important thing, being a surrendered soul. Because when you're a surrendered soul, then the teacher can give that knowledge. Because he'll realize that you will take that knowledge and there won't be any resistance to that knowledge. Because that knowledge has to do with the absolute truth. And that knowledge is meant to be applied. So what is true may not necessarily be how we are acting and living. Certain things that we are attached to, we shouldn't be according to the truth. And certain things that we are not attached to, we should be according to the truth. So accepting the truth means changing our life in ways that may be uncomfortable to our own sense gratification. So when a disciple is surrendered, meaning what you want I will do, then the guru can give him that truth. But if he sees that the person is attached and not surrendered and independent because he wants to keep that independence to keep his situation according to his attachments and ignorance, then the spiritual master cannot give fully. If he gives fully, the disciple may rebel, because our perception is based on our attachments. So as soon as he gives fully, so as soon as there's something that the disciple doubts, then he'll reject the guru. He'll reject the spiritual master, because he'll be attached to something that truth will entail him giving up. So then he'll resist, because he doesn't see it. And the whole idea of Tattva-darshana is the guru sees. And we don't see all truth. So if he says, this is it, do this. If it's a rope, pick it up. When you're seeing it's a snake, you won't pick it up, because you don't like snakes. So you'll resist. But that's actually a rope. So it's this kind of understanding. Purport, the spiritual master is always prepared to impart knowledge to the disciple, and specifically when the disciple is very inquisitive. Inquisitiveness on the part of the disciple is greatly necessary for the progressive disciple. Maharaj Parikshit is a typical disciple because he is perfectly inquisitive. If one is not very inquisitive about self-realization, one need not approach a spiritual master simply to make a show of discipleship. Not only is Maharaj Parikshit inquisitive concerning all he has inquired about, but he is also anxious to know about what he has not been able to inquire. Factually, it is not possible for a man to inquire about everything from the spiritual master, but the bona fide spiritual master is able to enlighten the disciple in every way for the disciple's benefit. O great sage, you are as good as Brahma, the original living being. Others follow custom only, as followed by the previous philosophical speculators. So certainly, Atra, in this matter, he certainly, Bhavan, yourself, Yata, as Parameshti, Brahma. You're as good as the predecessor Acharya, who is following Krishna. So your knowledge is coming from the infallible Lord. Apare, others, Anushtitam, they just follow Purvesham as a matter of custom. Purvajai, knowledge suggested by a previous philosopher. In other words, the other philosophers, they make their own system. But you go in the simplest succession back to Brahma, who is Atmabhu. He's born from, he's unborn. And Tene Brahma, and Krishna enlightened him. So this is the difference. Prabhupada explains the logic of this verse. It may be argued that Sukadeva is not the only authority. What about others? But Parikshit says to Sukadeva, you're special because others are taking the knowledge, you know, they follow in that line only by custom, but they have their own ideas. But this perfect knowledge, it comes in disciplic succession. And Prabhupada said also, these such great sages have their disciplic successions, but they're not authorized because such knowledge does not come directly from the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one can be independent except Narayana. Therefore, no one's knowledge can be perfect. So Prickett doesn't recognize such mental speculators, however great they may be, but here's some authorities like Sukadeva, who is non-different than the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the Parampara system. Name Shiva Parayanti Brahmana Nasanarami Vibhito Yutapirsham Tadvakya Abdi Vinisitam. O learned Brahmana, because of my drinking the nectar of the message of the infallible personality of Godhead, which is flowing down from the ocean of your speeches, I do not feel any sort of exhaustion due to my fasting. So this is Sridhar Swami. He said, it may be questioned how it is possible for Parikshit to hear about the pastimes of Krishna insomuch as he abstained from food and was in an agitated mind on account of being cursed, hurled on him by Sringi. So how is it possible that, as Dadu is mentioning, he was in a room with a snake, a poisonous snake that would kill him? Could you sit up and chant? What would your mind be like if there was a poisonous snake in the room about to kill you? Could you sit up peacefully and hear this? Could you hear this class nicely if there's a cobra under my bed? Huh? Difficult? Even if there was a cobra in the bathroom, it would be difficult. So how is it possible? Not eating, not drinking, and he became so agitated before, when he was thirsty before, he got himself in this whole trouble. How is it possible? And this is how it's possible. And again, we get the Sanskrit words because we studied before. Bibita, drinking. Achuta, the unfallible. Piyusham, nectar. Tat, from your. Vakyabhi, from the ocean of speech. Vinishritam, flowing down from the ocean of speech. He's getting the nectar flowing down from the ocean of speech. So, the disciplic succession from Narada Vyas is particularly different from others. And this is how, then these others, Aparay, mentioned in the last verse, the others, the disciplic succession from the other sages is simple waste of time, being devoid of a chutakata, or the message of the infallible Lord. The infallible Lord. Any questions? Sutta uvacha su upamantrito ragya kataya miti shatpate brahmarato brisham prito Vishnu Ratena Shamsadi. Sutta Goswami said, thus Shukadev Goswami, being invited by Maharaj Prickett to speak on topics of the Lord Sri Krishna with the devotees, was very, very much pleased. So he had some sadhi in the meeting of Maharaj Prickett and Shukadev, Brisham. He's very much pleased. And why was he pleased? Because of this. Because of the last verse, this Maharaj Prickett was not at all tired of hearing the topics of the Lord and was more and more anxious to hear them on and on without interest, with interest. Therefore, he was very, very pleased, invited by Maharaj Prickett to speak. He became very, very happy because he was so interested in speaking. He was so surrendered to that message. You're not interested in hearing Krishna Katha unless you are surrendered, unless you want that absolute truth and you want to apply it and it's important to you. So these are the two great souls discussing. And Prabhupada also says, like Arjuna and Krishna. Same thing. Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Devotion, some people say that Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, But I see a river of nectar flowing from the moon-like face of Krishna to Arjuna. So this ocean, ocean of speeches flowing down from the mouth in the parampara, the ocean which are piyushan, they're just like nectar, bibita. It's drinking. Speaking and hearing Krishna katha is not an intellectual process. It's drinking. It's actually like nectar. We apply our intelligence, but when the dynamic is set between teacher and student, it becomes bibita. It becomes drinking this nectar. So this is there. And there's Vishnurata, his hearing. That's Arjuna, Prikshit, who was saved in the womb. And there's Brahmarata, which is Shukadev. And a Vishnurata should hear the Bhagavatam from a Brahmarata. And this dynamic is just so nectar. He began to reply to the inquiries of Maharaj Prickett by saying that the science of the personality of God had was spoken first by the Lord himself to Brahma when he was first born. Srimad Bhagavatam is the supplementary Vedic literature, and it is just in the pursuance of the Vedic, of the Vedas. So he began to reply by saying that it was spoken in disciplic succession at the very beginning, and it's Brahma Samhitam. It pursues the Vedas. And it's Puranam. It's a supplement to the Vedas. He also prepared himself to reply to all that King Parikshit had inquired from him. Maharaj Prickett was the best in the dynasty of the Pandus, and thus he was able to ask the right questions from the right person. Purport, Maharaj Prickett asked many questions, some of them very curiously, to know things as they are, but it is not necessary for the master to answer them in the order of the disciples' inquiries, one after another. But Sukadev, experienced teacher they was, answered them in a systematic way, as they received from the chain of disciplic succession, and he answered all of them without exception. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second canto, eighth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Questions by King Parikshit. Anupur Vyena says, in the beginning to the end, and Sridhar Swami in his commentary says, this indicates the order in which the Supreme Lord had spoken the narrative of the Bhagavatam, and not according to the questions put by Maharaj Prickett in the reversed way, or in whatever order he put them in. So he answered them. So this is very nice. So this sets so many questions, and then chapter 9 comes answers by citing the Lord's version. Are there any questions? Yeah.
Have you ever heard the story from Vaivasvata Purana, from Brahma Vaivasvata Purana, where Sukadeva Goswami was protected by Krishna?
No. Do you know? Mm. I don't know that story. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. One-dimensional system where she's oppressed, but she accepts her role because she knows that everyone understands that that's just one aspect of the social division for just practical managerial things. So they don't get upset. And the woman just follows whatever her husband says. You know, in like the final saying authority structure, but in so many other ways, she's, you know, what is it? When someone is God, put on a pedestal, like, respected in a godly way. So you see that's what happens. They lack the culture. So when sudras take those positions, or people who are in culture take those positions, then this birthright or bodily designations become the whole aspect of the relationship. We used to have that, and you know, we know that in this kind of, if someone was a guru GBC or a GBC god, you know, and you felt like you were always within a corporation because there was just only hierarchical structure. A good example of a cultured person who, and you lose the Shakti. And that's what happened to how Kali Yuga came, because Sringi, who was the Brahmins, the Brahmins have to guide the Kshatriyas, because if the Kshatriyas don't have the benefit of passion, of goodness, then passion destroys everything. So a Vedic culture, the Kshatriyas are under the Brahmins, and therefore they have the benefit of goodness. But when the Brahmins don't behave properly, then the Kshatriyas act independently and don't have the benefit of goodness, and then society goes to hell. So this is actually what happened. And then when the Kshatriyas don't have the benefit of goodness, then what do they do to the Vaishyas? They exploit them. So then what do the Vaishyas do? They become independent of the Kshatriyas. And when the Vaishyas become independent, they exploit everyone. And then what happens to the Sudras? They say, why should he have all the money? And why I'm doing all the work? And then we have
communism. So it all starts from the Brahmins. And they have to be cultured. So the example, when I thought of this, I was thinking of Radhanath Swami in Chaupati. And you can see, he's the absolute head of that, the place. But not in an artificial way. I mean, really, he has the power. But you can see, let's say when he deals with a big industrialist, Bombay businessman who is very, very like pious and cultured family, it's not that he's thinking he's even my disciple or he's a new devotee or whatever. You know, he gives him so much respect. And because he respects everyone, then he has so much authority. So this is the Brahminical Tejas, and it's based on culture. And unfortunately, when Prabhupada had to set up a social system in society and make these divisions, which he had to do for the sake of preaching and organization, that the devotees lacked the culture. And therefore, as a result of lacking the culture, then the leadership's, the authority of the leadership gradually became diminished. So, I used to listen to this, this guy, Walter, on the news, and he said, that's one man's opinion. That's what I'm going to say. That's one man's opinion. But this is what I gleaned from this Sringi story. It's very interesting how Kali Yuga entered. And, you know, even myself, because, you know, it's the sense of ISKCON, it's in the air. So everybody gives some thought of reform. What I say is this, Krishna Katha. For the Krishna Katha. And purifying our heart and establishing authority. We need authority, because then we see if the leadership doesn't have authority, then, you know, people don't have the benefit of goodness and direction and of Prabhupada's vision and so many things. And therefore, when there's reform, it generally becomes worse. Every time you meet in reform, it becomes worse because the authority actually hasn't been established. So you make a change, and what you do is, because people are complaining because they feel exploited, then when the change is made, it results in less authority. So it almost becomes even worse every time there's a reform. So this is the real thing. I didn't want to bring in, that's my opinion on the world. I expressed it. If I said, what? If I said anything wrong, just put it on calm. Let everyone know. That happened to me once. I was actually shocked. I was in Gitanagar at the cabin. And I was asked some controversial question. It may have been on the, you know, maybe, I don't know. It was one of those philosophical points that you don't discuss. So I said I didn't want to really discuss it, that many, you know. And immediately, it was on calm. Immediately. And I got a phone call, what are you doing down there? And I felt, I'm in this little cabin. Give me a break. I want to be peaceful. You know, it's out in, you know, the woods of Pennsylvania. So, I'm getting into more comments here than the... So that's... So it's destroyed in that way. And the techniques of sacrifice. Techniques of sacrifice is swaha, swadha, vishat, the altar of sacrifice, the ingredients to perform sacrifice, the hymns to perform sacrifice. No one knows them anymore. So then Kalki comes. At the beginning of creation, there are penants, myself, Brahma, and the Prajapatis, the great sages who generate. Then during the maintenance of the creation, there are Lord Vishnu, the demigods with controlling powers, and the kings of different planets. But at the end, there is irreligion, and then Lord Shiva and the atheists full of anger. All of them are different representative manifestations of the energy of the supreme power, the Lord. So now he mentions the guna avatars. So it's interesting how it's broken up. Sarge, that's in the beginning of creation. Then there's aham, Brahma, with tapa, austerities, rishiya, nava, the rishis, and prajesha, the prajapatis. That's the beginning. And then in the middle, stane. In the middle, while maintaining, there's dharma, religion, mukha, it says Lord Vishnu, manu, the lawgiver, and Amara, the demigods. Then it says, Ante, in the end, there's Hara, Lord Shiva, Asura Adya, and the atheists, Manyu Vasha, who are subject to anger, there's irreligion. Prabhupada says, but ultimately we take shelter of Vishnu. So, now we'll see a little bit of this wonderful mood of bhakti of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, he was very, very fearful when he had to create the world, because he wanted to avoid ahankara. What is ahankara? It means ahamkara. I am the doer. That's the illusion of the world. And that illusion, I am the doer, is to facilitate your desire to be the enjoyer, which necessitates that you're the controller. Because enjoyment is not just sensuous experience, it's a sense of superiority. So you have to have this ahamkara, this sense of I am the doer. So when he was asked to create the world, he was thinking, I'm going to be engaged in so much activity, you know, that how can I avoid this consciousness of ahankara? And he was very afraid. And on that basis, he asked Krishna to explain to him how he can work in the world and avoid ahamkara. And on the basis of that, the Bhagavatam was spoken in four verses. Now, he did not like to be the controller. Remember this one saint, sadhu in Vrindavan, was once asked by someone. He said, he asked them all technical questions about the creation. You know, he asked this sadhu. You know, the sadhu was just a nice man, and he, you know, just mostly, but his answer was really funny. When I was there, he said, he looked at the person, he said, oh, you want to become Lord Brahma? And the person happened to be a big, you know, leader, controller type. So he said, oh, you want to be Lord Brahma? He said, I'm just interested in Rupa Raghunath. So Lord Brahma, because of having to take that position, in his next life, he prayed that he can execute Krishna consciousness in all humility. And therefore, he took birth as Haridas Thakur, where he wouldn't have to. So he's very humble, Lord Brahma. So even though he is like the secondary creator, he definitely has a sense of humility. He doesn't have false prestige. He sees that Krishna is the ultimate doer and he's his servant. So these, his verses, who can describe completely the prowess of Vishnu? This is the thing. Is when you're in a leadership position, your business is to look up to look up, not to look down. You may have subordinates, you look up. If you're guru, you shouldn't think you're guru, you should think you're disciple. You should be looking to your guru. And in that way, then you can help the people under you who see you in the right position. So we see Lord Brahma, he's not in that ego that like King Vena was. I am the controller, I am God now. There's one king we read about who. But he's very humble. He said, who can describe completely the prowess of Vishnu? Even the scientists who might have counted the particles of the atoms of the universe cannot do so. Because it is he only who in his form of Trivikram moved his leg effortlessly beyond the topmost planet, Satyaloka, up to the neutral state of the three modes of nature, and all were moved. So how can you estimate the prowess of Vishnu? In two steps, he covered the whole universe. And the scientists, they can't even count all the particles and atoms. They cannot do so. So one can describe, so he's saying, no one can describe completely what Brahma has described in brief. He's described it in brief, the creation. No one can describe it completely. So he's feeling humble. He's not seeing what he's done. He's seeing what he hasn't done. He's not saying, I described creation. He's saying, I barely described it. Because his prowess is so great. And Prabhupada said, but even if one is able to count such atomic particles or is able to roll up the sky like one's bedding, Even then, one is unable to estimate the extent of the prowess and energy of the Supreme Lord. Neither I nor all the sages born before you, Narada Muni, know fully the omnipotent personality of Godhead. So what can others who are born after us know about him? Even the first incarnation of the Lord, namely Shesha, has not been able to reach the limit of such knowledge, although he's describing the qualities of the Lord with 1,000 faces. That all the power of the Supreme... Even Brahma, they cannot know all Krishna's power. This is his point. It's unlimited. Prashya Shaktir Vividayasi. It's unlimited. So what can... Never, Vidami, do I know, aham, myself. I mean, all those, Munagraha, the great sages, Agra, and ones, they don't know the Maya Balasya, the strength of the energy of the Purushasya, of the personality of Godhead. Even they don't know. Kutaha, what to speak of others? Avara, born after us. What to speak of others? Born after us. Even Sesha doesn't know. So this is his bhakti. He's appreciating so much Krishna. But it fits also, there's different relationships he has with Krishna, but one is called Adi Krita Devata. He works for Krishna. So he's appreciating his boss. But anyone who is specifically favored by the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, due to the unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord, can overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion and can understand the Lord. But those who are attached to this body, which is meant to be eaten at the end by dogs and jackals, cannot do so. But anyone who is specifically favored by the Supreme Lord, the person, due to unalloyed surrender, only those, yesham, only those, to the Supreme Lord who dayayat, does he bestow his mercy. Ashritya pada, and with surrendered souls, sarvatmana, by all means they're surrendered souls. And this is a very important word, vyalikam, without pretension. This is also described in Shonaka Rishi's prayer. That bhakti means gata, vyalikam, the path of not pretension. Bhakti means sincerity. Because bhakti means the desire to give Krishna pleasure. When you're pretentious, you're acting to give Krishna pleasure, but you have other desires. It's motivated. So bhakti means sincerity. You without any other pretensions. You just want to give Krishna pleasure. And this is the essence of bhakti. I was meditating this morning. I don't meditate much, but I was doing my deity worship, and I was just thinking of that point. How to get this bhakti, actually, to have my pleasure be Krishna's pleasure. Because I'm doing so many other works, but I still have motives that I'll enjoy when I become a pure devotee. But how to actually come to the point that that's your taste. And when I was thinking that, a little drop of it came. This little sense that I really do want Krishna to be happy. I really want to give Krishna some pleasure beyond my own personal desire. And I realize that this is the drop. This is what we have to get into our heart, this bhakti. So those who get the mercy of Krishna, who are completely surrendered and without pretension, then atitarani, they can overcome Dustaram, the insurmountable Devamayam, the energies of the Lord, the material energy. And they can overcome that. And by overcoming that energy, then they can know the Lord. And that's, Deva Asha, Devi Asha Gunamayi, Mama Maya Dharatiya. It's impossible to overcome. It's Krishna. Devi Asha Gunamayi, Mama Maya Dharatya, Mamebi Ye Papadyante, Mayam Etam Tarantite. But if you surrender to Krishna, then you can overcome the illusory potency. So an illusion is gone, then you have knowledge. So unless you surrender to Krishna, and Krishna by that surrender sees that you want to see truth, then you won't see truth. In other words, we're not seeing the truth because we don't want to see the truth. What's the truth? Krishna is God and I'm his servant. We don't want to see that, so Krishna says, okay, you can be an illusion. So seeing truth has to do with our own desire. O Narada, although the potencies of the Lord are unknowable and immeasurable, because we are all surrendered souls, we know how he acts through his Yogamaya potencies. And similarly, the potencies of the Lord are also known to the all-powerful Shiva, the great king of the atheist family, namely Prahlad, Swayambhuva Manu, his wife, Shatarupa, his sons and daughters like Swayambhuva Manu, his wife, Shatarupa, his sons and daughters like Priyadvata, Uttanapad, Akuti, Devahuti, Prasuti, Pachinibadi, Ribu, Anga, the father of Vena, Maharaj Dhruva, Ishvaku, Aila, Muchakunda, Maharaj Janaka, Gadi, Raghu, Ambarisha, Sagara, Vaya, Nahusha, Mandata, Alarka. It's interesting that he's, Brahma's given all these names. Shatadanve, Anu, Rantidev, Bhishma, Bali, Amutraya, Dilip, Sobari, Utanka, Shibi, Devala, Pipalara, Saraswat, Udhava, Parasara, Burishena, Vibhishana, Hanuman, Sukadev Goswami, Arjuna, Arishtishena, Vidura, Shrutadev, etc. They can know because they're surrendered. They can know something. They know that the Lord has unlimited potency. They can conceive. All the great devotees of the Lord, as mentioned above, who flourished in the past or present, and all the devotees of the Lord who will come in the future, are aware of the different potencies of the Lord, along with the potency of his name, quality, pastimes, entourage, personality, etc. And how do they know? Certainly it's not by mental speculation, nor by any attempt by dint of limited instruments of knowledge. By the limited instruments of knowledge, either the senses or the material instruments like microscopes and telescopes, one cannot even fully know the Lord's material potencies, which are manifest before our eyes. For example, there are many millions and billions of planets far, far beyond the scientist's calculation. But these are only manifestations of Lord material and energy. Anyway, the same person therefore ceases to speculate on subjects beyond the jurisdiction of his tiny brain, and as a matter of course, he tries to learn to surrender unto the Supreme Lord, who alone can lead one to the platform of real knowledge. Lord is knowable only by one who is a surrendered soul. And Brahmaji, the greatest of all knowledges. And ultimately, Prabhupada said the Lord is unlimited, and by the grace of Yogamaya helps the surrendered soul to know him proportionally with the advance of one's surrender. He's unlimited. We can know something of him. And to know something of him is so wonderful, rather than to just understand illusion. Surrendered souls, even from groups leading sinful lives, such as women, the laborer class, the mountaineers, and the Siberians, or even the birds and beasts, can also know about the science of Godhead and become liberated from the clutches of illusory energy by surrendering unto the pure devotees of the Lord and by following in their footsteps. So what is the use of mentioning any more names? Anyone who is attached, even the lowest of the low, even in terms of caste and body, they can know the Lord. So what's the use of mentioning any more? All surrendered souls, they can understand. And Prabhupada also makes the point that surrender is in our hand. There's no, this is the eligibility for devotional service is simply our will. so simple. Prabhupada said the process is simple, the application is difficult. So simple because anyone can do it. The application is difficult because you have to do it. In other words, the material qualification, there's no material qualification. The qualification of heart is there. I was just thinking, I was once in the temple here, and I would always watch Vishal. He would distribute the maha, and I mean, he was such a character, and he couldn't control his senses. And while he was distributing books, his hands were all filled with turmeric from eating the maha, and he was like, you know, and he would be chanting his Gayatri, and sometimes he'd walk out of the temple a half hour later, he was still chanting it, because his mind would just be going all over the place. You know, it was like, and then I remember this South Indian Brahmin came, and he sat up straight, and he chanted his round, and this is great, he left the next day. He left after 3 days. So anybody can do it, it's whether you want to do it, and that has to do with your condition of your heart. So bhakti just means sincerity. Do you want to serve Krishna or not? If you want to serve Krishna and give him pleasure, you're a devotee. And who can do that? Anyone. You don't have to be rich, famous, poor. In the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, when it mentions there's 4 verses that describe Krishna consciousness in full, one of the verses describes abhideya tattva, or the practice of devotional service. So it has 3 parts. It's very interesting. The practice, what is abhideya means, one should search for this. What is this? Priti, or prema. We should search for that intensified consciousness to give the Lord pleasure. This is after the verse that describes the piyojana tattva or prema. So then the abhideya verse comes, you should search for this. Then it says directly and indirectly. Directly means pure, you know, devotional service, chanting and hearing. And indirectly means the spiritual master will explain the obstacles. In other words, directly means the rules and indirectly means the regulations. What you do and what you don't do. Both ways you have to search for Krishna. And then it says sarvatra, sarvada, anywhere and everywhere. Which means that it's universally applicable. And Prabhupada describes Prahlad Maharaj in the womb. You don't have to be born. You know, you don't have the particular species of life. Anyone. So this is also mentioned. Okay. Any questions? Because this next verse is very technical and complicated. I'm kind of at the... I guess I get about 5 more minutes. I'll just read it. What is realized as the absolute Brahman is full of unlimited bliss without grief. That is certainly the ultimate phase of the Supreme Enjoyer, the personality of Godhead. He's eternally void of all disturbances and fearless. He is complete consciousness as opposed to matter. Uncontaminated without distinctions, he is the principal primeval cause of all causes and effects, in whom there is no sacrifice for fruit of activities, in whom the illusory energy does not stand. So I'm trying to figure out, because there's another verse, a little technical. I think what's happening here now is he's explained surrender. So you therefore have to explain Krishna's position, because our surrender is based on faith. It's based on knowledge. So you have to have that sambandhigyan. So this is Krishna's absolute position is being presented. Also, another verse will come up after a few verses. They describe the characteristics of the Supreme Lord. So there's a long purport on that. And pratibodha matram. This means a consciousness opposed to the material counterpart. This basically means it's not matter. But then it also says here that parasya brahma, he's the supreme absolute. And ajastra shukam, he has unlimited happiness. So when Prabhupada describes this, it's very interesting that the Supreme Lord has unlimited happiness. Prabhupada says the Supreme Lord is the supreme soul of everything, and therefore in the supreme conception, affection is realized. The conception of affection is due to the relationship of soul to soul. A father is affectionate to his son because there's some relationship or nearness between the son and the father. So because there's an affection between us and God, therefore Prabhupada says, as such, there is unlimited flow of everlasting happiness without the fear of its being broken as we experience here in the material world. When the personality of God has met, the fullness of affection becomes manifested because of the reality of the affectionate relationship. So it's such a nice point that this is... what's real happiness is affection or love. So that's fully manifest. The reality is God because our eternal relationship is with God. And others are temporary. So if we're seeking real happiness, which means exchanging love, it has to be the real relationship. And we are part and parcel of God. And we're meant for His service. I'll just finish up with when I visited Hridayananda Maharaj. And he always had something interesting whenever I visit him. So he showed me a letter from his mother. And his mother wrote him a letter and said, I don't mind that you want to be a priest or a religious person, but why don't you come home? You can live near us and be a rabbi. I don't have any objection. So I saw he wrote back to his mother. And it was very nice. It was a very good line. He said, our eternal relationship is with Krishna and all others are temporary. So I saw, when I was envisioning that, I thought, yes, when we think of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna, we think of like a cartoon up in the spiritual sky, you know? But, you know, the relationships here are real. And that's the illusion of the material world, that we take the temporary for the permanent. And that's why Prabhupada would caution.